When instead of building a wall, you build a Bill Hamid. It's That So MLS. With myself, Nick Thornton, and with me as always is Andrew Bates.
How are you doing?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
Doing great. This is a, if you ignore almost all international soccer, it was a real breather of a week.
When you're on an international break, but you still have league games to play, if that's so MLS. We could have just gone with that one, I guess. Yeah, kind of odd that there were international friendlies going on, and I guess some that mattered apparently somewhere in some universe. But there were still some MLS games that happened that we can talk about.
Yeah, no doubt. It was almost the interesting thing for me was that the fact that there are, of course, we cover the whole league, but we have interest in Vancouver and Toronto and Montreal, and none of those teams played. So it was a great exercise in neutrality.
It was, and I actually oddly sort of paid a little bit more attention to it without the distraction of table watching for teams that really mattered in the ultimate race. Although Portland and Seattle, of course, matter. Although no, Seattle didn't play, but Portland did.
Let's jump right into the game that you had said last week was going to be your big focus coming into it of sort of the three, which was New York City versus DC United.
Hmm. I was just really curious to see what would happen here because I figured it would be kind of the big test of we've seen teams get hot this season and everybody's talking about them. Of course, with Rooney coming into DC, that's been the case and they've been slowly climbing up the table. So it's kind of one of those things that you sort of measure, okay, do they actually have a shot or have they just been, you know, playing in front of a home crowd in a new stadium with a great player behind them? I think we've both agreed that they're kind of the real deal and they have been all season. They just haven't really had things fall into place. And I don't know about you, but I was pretty happy with the result. If I'm putting my DC United fan hat on, I thought it was an overall pretty good performance. Yeah. Some of the old problems came back to haunt them. And I think at one point in the game, they're mentioning, you know, DC just couldn't hold on to the ball. But against a team like New York City FC that likes to hold the ball so much, I don't necessarily see that as a major failing of them. It was kind of a bit of a sloppy match at points. But how do you think this ranks? What do you think this means ultimately for looking at DC United's sort of late season run?
It's unique. We're recording this on a Wednesday, and DC played again, and so it won in that. So at this point in the season, especially from where they started, 4 out of 6 is pretty good in terms of their climb up the table. So I think they really have remade themselves in terms of the sort of team and approach that they have. This was a really weird game to me because ultimately it didn't feel like DC had a lot going forward attacking. It didn't feel like they had that, that was part of their plan. Their plan was to soak up pressure, you know, not give anyone space in the box and try to get a goal on the counter. And they did. They got a sort of a fluke goal from Birnbaum on a counter. And as good as New York City is, they relied on New York to have, you were saying that, yeah, like have so much of the ball and not be able to do much with it. Like they have this, the you know, everybody was praising at the end of the game. I watched a lot. I kind of missed the first half and I watched the second half. And like there was just so much. You know, what I have in my notes is a lot of dancers, but no rhythm. Because, yeah. Like, Maxi Morales is great. Matarita is great. Castellanos, their Valentin Castellanos, their player that debuted against Vancouver, he's great. And a lot of people looked at this game as Villa, you know, once DC goes ahead, as David Villa putting the game on his back and trying so many times to get ahead. But there was just so many balls. There's like so many like balls from out wide that came to nothing, which is like they have this, you know, if you look at it on the MLSsoccer.com, their formation is so narrow down the middle, almost like a 2-1-2-1, or sorry, a 4-1-2-1-2, almost, or a diamond, a very tight diamond midfield. They're playing in the narrowest midfield. They're playing in the narrowest field, their own home field. And there are so many plays where Villa takes the ball out wide and tries to send it into an absolute a penalty area packed with DC United defenders. And I initially had put this down to, a negative to New York, but you do really have to give DC credit for how they defended.
Absolutely. And it wasn't pretty at times, but it didn't need to be. And no team against New York City FC needs to be pretty or should be pretty in their defending. The two things that really stood out to me in this game was, one, also, you know, David Villa missed a number of chances, as did other players. Balls just going wide or just not falling where they needed to. But Bill Hamid, if you want to talk about carrying a team on your back, made 4 or 5 excellent saves in this match.
Yeah, no doubt.
And still got to the David Villa free kick. He didn't get there quite fast enough, but you got to think that Bill Hamid has cemented his immediate future as starting goalkeeper. I mean, Osted is out with an injury for probably the rest of the season, but he just looks so good, clearly understands the team, but also understands what players are going to do. And where they're likely to hit. To see a goalkeeper so disappointed at not saving a David Villa free kick, I think says a lot. He's not disappointed that he scored. He's disappointed because he thinks he could have got there and almost did. Other piece was that this high... Sorry, do you want to jump in there?
I was just going to say that the playoffs are still, not necessarily... are not necessarily a given, but if through the work of Hamid, they can secure that spot, you've got to think that he will have earned his keep in that regard.
Absolutely. Earned his keeper.
You're going to say?
The other piece there that this game brought up to me is just that New York City FC is, although they've got great players and a stacked midfield like we've talked about and you've brought up again, is that they're not a particularly versatile team. They like to play the game their way, especially at home. And this is usually the point in the season where teams can figure that out and break it down. And we've seen them get bitten by this in the playoffs 2 years in a row, that they're so stuck with their game plan that they're not always easily able to adapt. Overall, I think they did a good job of doing what they do well. But it does kind of make you think about, many of the teams that they could be lining up against in the playoffs and how they're going to be able to adapt in a way that we just haven't really seen them be able to do. Now, they're still sitting pretty comfortably in third. They're still 6 points clear of Columbus, but, Columbus, Philadelphia, Montreal, DC have all been in better form. And regardless of where they end up in the table, New York City is now likely to, or at least facing the possibility of having to play in the knockout rounds. And I think teams know where to hit them now. And that's not to say that David Villa magic can't carry them through a round or two, but I think there's an awful lot of holes in the ship that we haven't seen just because of the strength of their offense through the season.
Oddly enough, I feel like they have more of a challenge in the early rounds of the playoffs if they do not make the automatic bye spaces, because it's like, if they're playing against the Red Bulls or Atlanta or Dallas or a team that relies on opening itself offensively, like DC was able to achieve this result by completely closing everything down in a way that they did not do late, in this midweek game either. It's not how they play every game, but it's a game plan that they used to great success away against New York. And I feel like you're going to get, if they can sort of hold through and they are playing with a team that has to box with them, that's going to benefit New York City a little bit more. But if they were to face DC again, or if you were looking at the current playoff standings to face Montreal or face Philadelphia, you could easily see one of those three teams adopting this defensive posture, thinking we just have to get through one game of this.
Yeah, and teams that are a little bit chaotic and unpredictable can have results. I mean, look at Vancouver, for God's sakes. Like that, there's no way that we should have come out of that game with a point. And yet that was almost sort of the beginning of their slide.
Yeah.
I think we can actually credit Vancouver to the beginning of the New York City FC slide.
I credit the Caps Lab Tour fans.
Well, yes, them as well. A certain somebody could have been that laugh.
The David Villa magic is so strange to me because I spent, you know, when it looked like they were losing in this game, you look at it and you go, wow, I can't believe they're losing. All the chances are super frustrating. 31-2 on shots with nine shots on, one on target. So no saves by New York.
And Johnson's looked a little bit shaky in the last few games, and I'm sensing it, not because he's not a fantastic goalkeeper, but I'm sensing a little bit of frustration and lack of chemistry between him and his defenders, that he's not getting what he needs, and that's making his confidence sag.
Oh, I have a point. I have a point of thinking of chemistry with defenders. But the one thing I just wanted to say about Villa, it's strange, though, to be in a situation where, like, oh, it's so frustrating. And then to have, of course, I guess, as much as I think that the quality of the work that was being done, if there was so much work being done by Villa, was not necessarily up to snuff for much of it.
Yeah.
That free kick was gorgeous. And it was just hit out of nowhere, right into the, with just the right amount of speed and precision. Beautiful to see.
Absolutely. The only reason why I didn't react more to it, and people were like, it's like one of the goals of the season. I'm like, it's also just what David Villa does. Like, I wasn't surprised at all. I mean, I was like, sat there watching it with my mouth open. But how many free kicks have you seen him hit like that?
I'm sitting there as the sort of the armchair quarterback. And then he does something to make my jaw drop. But,
same sure, time, yeah. Yeah, bum, you can't hit anything except for an impossible dipping free kick that somehow goes high over the wall and then dips low into the net.
But at the same time, 85% possession and 31 shots.
Yeah.
Like, they could have got, got more. They could have got a win. They didn't really even maybe need a win, depending on, you know, they're going to make the playoffs, but...
And I don't know that I saw enough of the game to make this assessment, but it's possible that they're just trying to play too much through Villa at times, and when he tries to take the whole team on his back, then you lose some of the offensive prowess of other players. Although Matarita certainly was all over the place and had many chances, so maybe that's not a fair assessment.
Everybody had a lot of the ball, as you would in an 85% possession game, but. I'm looking at passes. It's 68% possession. 68.9.
Good Lord.
In a game like that, everybody is going to get a lot of the ball. It's kind of like, and not to blame Valentin Castellanos, who I believe is 18 or 19. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of the whole, he's not the only person, he's 19. He's not, by no means is the only person in the New York attack that's like this, but it's like it really looked, but whether or not the ball was at the feet of Villa, Castellanos, or Morales, it seems like they were all executing their own individual plans about how to get the ball to the net and score.
Yeah. And that's where I think that things are maybe biting them. Also, feel like this game and they didn't play another one. There's just a lot of names I didn't recognize. So I've made a note to pay a little bit more attention to them in the upcoming games because I think the Stars have kind of been hogging it. But I wonder if there's some injury troubles there or they're just rotating in some younger players or what's going on. But there's a guy like named Sands or something, and I'm like, who is that?
Oh, is that I've heard his name before. I think it's Zach. Am I right about this? James Sands.
I have no idea.
Absolutely not. His name is James Sands.
Okay.
He's 18 as well. Because I think I actually did hear something about this. Was there a third teenager in the lineup, or was that a different game that I'm thinking of? Somebody was saying there was three. It was a groundbreaking lineup for that sort of thing. I think maybe that was Canada. Right. Hmm. So there's just two. But it's like, yeah, that's a fair assessment. It's like New York City had this weird thing where when they had the coaching change midseason, they got better in, like, you know, right away, and then sort of got worse. Right, so the midfielder, the big midfield issue is that Jesus Medina had a hamstring injury.
Right, yes.
Who is one of their key midfielders. So that's why you're seeing some midfield names that you were not as familiar with.
I'm afraid of change.
The one point I was going to make, because you were talking about Sean Johnson and camaraderie with the defense, I think that this is a big point of Bill Hamid's success. I think that when you are watching them, this is nothing against Ousted. You feel like there's a lot. I feel like Hamid has a certain amount of talent for organizing the defenders that are in front of him, communicating with the defenders, and sort of being able to get them to execute his strategy.
Mm-hmm. I totally agree. And we saw that on full display late this afternoon. As finally the game's in hand, people are probably sick to death of us talking about it, or me talking about it. That is done. DC United's caught up to the rest of the league, played Minnesota, got a great 2-1 victory over them. Again, Bill Hamid on full display. And again, just seeing that DC United is such a slippery little snake of a team right now that you don't quite know where they're going to hit you or when. And actually have quite a bit of depth. And who gets the goal or the game-winning goal but none other than our old buddy, couldn't hit a barn door, Darren Maddux! Fresh off of international duty, gets subbed on, gets the game-winning goal, and it was a peach as well.
Oh, yeah. I was going to note that this iteration of DC, the line that you're seeing, is kind of a little different in terms of the one that we saw before Rooney that had a lot of sort of freewheeling. A little bit of Yamil Assad, who's currently injured, a little bit of Maddux or whatever else. I see Rooney more as an organizer as much, even though he's a forward.
But I think he's having the Schweinsteiger effect. Not the Schweinsteiger of this season, but the Schweinsteiger of last season effect.
But it's so weird to see that from a sole striker. But I think they're more balanced than they were at the beginning of the season.
This is maybe where it was the perfect trade, is that Wayne Rooney, it was well talked about in England how he wanted to shift into a midfield role at Manchester United, and that was just not on for anyone because of his fitness levels. Not so much his fitness levels, but his age. He couldn't quite keep up. But in MLS, he can kind of play both roles, right? Yeah. Like, he's still got that poacher's instinct of a striker and can still obviously score those goals. But that brilliant play that we saw a couple of weeks ago from him, where he's dashing back to win the ball and make the play, he's also smart enough and knows what runs to make. And he's playing against other players where the age is maybe a little bit more even for him, that he's still competitive. And you start to see that, like, he's kind of in the perfect position. He can play striker if needed and where we know he's good, but also he can play in midfield, and he's obviously got a great understanding of that role. Just at the top flight in England isn't necessarily going to excel there.
I thought that he had a great he played, you know, you could see from the I only got to see the highlights, but you could see from that package that he plays – Late in the first half, he plays Acosta into space with a really, really great ball. I was trying to think. I can't remember if it was. I didn't put it in my notes, but oh right, no, it was the New York City DC one where it was another. It wasn't exactly the same as his well loved cross in for a goal that everybody paid attention to in the DC game. But he hit another perfectly timed ball from deep in the midfield that somebody ran up to, that Birnbaum ran up to in the NYC game. Not so much here because it was a lot of individual stuff, but I definitely noticed that.
Now, as Arsenal fan, as an Arsenal fan and as a Tottenham fan, I feel like it's a little bit sacrilegious, but are we becoming Wayne Rooney fans?
Well, I mean, this rebranding is working. It's working for me, and I'm
kind of a little excited every time he does something good, and I don't know if it's just because we're similar in age or what, but it feels dirty.
Well, it's the expectation is totally different, right? Like if you like, I remember watching, you know, sitting in England bars in Toronto watching the Euros. And watching people just – England fans just lose their minds every time that Rooney was on the ball and not able to generate, because he was looked at as this sort of – you know, he was put in the position of being this blue chip scorer even long after he stopped being a blue chip pure goal machine. But this is a different role from him, and it's being able – to a certain degree accentuating the positives – sometimes hiding the negatives.
Yeah, agreed. And I feel like we're going to, you know, assuming he's around next season, I feel like we, you know, we might see some of those flaws exposed, but there's no denying the freshness that it's had. Although I'd argue Bill Hamid coming back in has had just as much impact for the team. But anyway, we've talked an awful lot about DC United. There are other teams that played this week.
Just to before we get off the topic, to recognize the non-Rooney players that contributed in this game. Angelo Rodriguez, this is a Minnesota player, but Rodriguez scores the first goal at the beginning of the second half for Minnesota by really sticking in and collecting a rebound, sort of a block ball at a tight angle to score. Segura scores the first DC goal on a turn and shot in deep coverage, which was very impressive to look. That also came with a kind of a Rooney dummy, like the ball plays through Rooney and doesn't do anything, so everybody's kind of paying attention.
Yeah, we weren't gonna talk about Rooney, but that was a brilliant play, and I feel like that was also intentional. Is two defenders turn to look at him, and he opens up the other player.
Mm-hmm. And then the
tasty
final, the Matix is just textbook right place, right time, off of a great run and pass from Joseph Moore.
Yeah, and I would say a great run from Matix as well, and proving that as much as he's never going to be an MLS star, proves that, you know, his speed is pretty unparalleled in MLS. That despite his lack of scoring many goals, he scored some important ones for DC this year. And when things were going real bad for them, he was one of the few players that was consistently performing.
Yeah.
And sort of egging them on. And you can see why they brought him in. So it's nice to see that, you know, he's not just out of the picture because they've brought in some new players. That there's still a place for Darren Maddox, which who knew?
I was worried a little bit more. I was worried about him. I was worried a little bit more about Assad, who's injured. But like I said, I think that the formation for DC has balance. And so they seem to be doing a lot of treating. No, it wasn't the case in this game because he came in for Opare. But in past games, he's been the straight swap for Rooney.
Yeah.
And like, that's not a bad thing. Since the team is balanced, he fits in well.
Yeah.
And gets to have the spotlight.
Even yeah, they've got some pretty fantastic options to swap things around. Mm-hmm. Elsewhere in the league, I didn't get to see any of the SKC Orlando match. I think you could probably guess why I didn't highlight this one as one I needed to really watch. Did you get any one of this?
I watched some of these games. I had on, I was working the early shift last weekend, so I just had them on in the background. As you will have noticed from what I recall to be a 1-0 scoreline, not a lot of significance occurred here. The goal was nice. It was from Felipe Gutierrez who shoots a nice left footed shot through coverage. Was awesome, and Tim Melia had some great saves as well, but it was a continuing sort of so much effort is being put in by Orlando and Dom Dwyer, but it wasn't really able to come to much.
No, yeah, I just saw that Milia save. That's a good one. I'm looking at the goal now. I mean, yeah, I think at this point, well, about 6 months ago, everybody knew not much was going to happen with Orlando. Mm. Yeah, and there's not even really much in that goal.
You hear and them? It, they talk the,
it's funny.
They're talking about the, you know, the coach saying already people are playing for their contracts, which is realistic, but I don't know that it. I think that you still need to turn around morale a little bit.
You do, and you need to give them some sort of direction or some sort of goal to hit. You know, I don't want to disrespect the career that Joe Bendik has had, but you really have to feel they need to bring in a much more solid goalkeeper. And at this point in the season, it does feel kind of like, what have you got to lose? And just defensively try some different things. You know, I'm thinking of back to like, it's just been the worst possible season for Orlando off
oh,
of
yeah.
last year, a terrible season. I think this one's been much, much worse. And when you, especially considering when you have a player like Justin Merrim that comes in, and then goes back to his former club and immediately starts doing better.
They did everything right in terms of player acquisition, but they just weren't able to put together, they weren't able to combine those players together into a coherent whole.
No, and I don't know what that is, and you know, it'd be an interesting experiment perhaps in the off season to think about, like, if you were to build your perfect MLS team, if you were building an expansion team, what are the elements you'd want? Because I think a lot of us would pick a lot of the players that have ended up at the LAFCs and the Orlando Orlando SCs and etc. But as we've seen, that's not necessarily what it takes to succeed. And it's interesting that, because Orlando's in year four now, right?
Yeah.
That they've tried so many different things and the team still lacks any sense of identity or team chemistry. And possibly just because of all of the changes, but you have to imagine that, yeah, they're going to clear decks once again and, you know, maybe another new coach. I was actually surprised that SKC didn't get more out of this, and they've kind of looked a little bit saggy in the last few months with a few notable results sticking out in there, but they're beginning to look like a team that just, I think leggy is the term.
Yeah.
Just not completely fresh in ideas, some great players that can come in and make it count, but
I think we've seen over the course of the season, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I think that Johnny Russell is injured. Is that true?
I'm not sure. I was just going to say he's been one of the exceptions that he's been quite good for them, but I don't know his status, and I don't know if I can easily figure it out here.
I'm looking to see if he was thought to be injured before that. No, he was on international duties. That was his absence. There was a lot of, like, Russell, Rubio, and Shallowy were all missing from this game. So
Scotland played, and I didn't even know about it.
If all those players are missing, then you got to think that 1-0 is a great result, even if it's against Orlando.
How'd we do? Oh, shit, we lost 4-0 to Belgium. Never mind. Sorry, I looked that up.
So a bunch of that. So some of the key players are missing. I also think, this is just a sort of a hunch, I feel they really thrive on matchups. Like, I think that they are not necessarily a team that, you know, in sort of the Vancouver mold is great against top teams and has trouble against lower teams. But it's like, I really think that their triumph, and you say, you know, they're out of ideas, and it is true in some respects in terms of they're not like dominant. They were very quietly dominant last year. They are maybe not as dominant, like, you know, even though they have a great league table positioning, they're not as dominant. They don't seem as dominant this year, but I think that they really depend. They're a team that matches up really well, and I think that if you match that they play the strategy game quite well against another top team.
Yeah, and I mean, the other way of looking at it is, you know, why threaten injuries to players or expend too much effort on probably an easily winnable game? And of course, that can be a dangerous strategy in MLS, but considering Sporting KC's defensive record for most of the season, why not go and just get a 1-0 win over Orlando and just also have practice seeing a game out? Uh-huh. So, you know, there's something to be said for that.
There was one more MLS game on the schedule this week, and that was Portland getting a 2-0 win at Providence Park over Orlando or over Colorado, despite the fact that it seems like they scored about 80. They scored about 8 disallowed goals, it felt like.
Yeah. I think it's like 10 minutes in, there's the goal called offside, which it seems pretty clearly onside, but okay. The second one seemed kind of iffy, but leaning towards offside, and that was also called offside. This felt inevitable. There was also a penalty called back for Colorado, which I'm not quite sure. It did look like a foul on Jack McBean, but apparently there is a foul.
For sure.
Yeah, I thought, but apparently there was a foul on one of the defenders just leading up to that, which I couldn't be bothered to go back and look at.
and I saw that in the highlights too. I had this game on and fell asleep at about halftime because these games come on late in the day for me. So I missed the penalty, but the issue that I have with saying, oh, well, there was a foul earlier on the play before you get to the penalty, is that, like, even if the referee didn't consciously play advantage is, like, I don't know if that, well, like that happens all the time, right? Like, that happens, like the referee has to play it, call it, and play advantage on it, but it's like, I feel like if you're going, you're going. You play to the whistle. So if the referee was going to make a call that they didn't do, that's one thing. But I don't know or understand why that has to be a review thing.
Yeah, that's where a clear and obvious error thing kind of gets confusing to me. Because it's...
To me,
I would be looking at it would be if the penalty itself, the penalty call, was a clear and obvious error. Mm-hmm. Which is that the goalkeeper, Gleason, just bowls through the back of Jack McBean and takes him out. That's a very clear penalty, but the build-up play, there's a missed foul, but a missed foul that's not in the penalty box is not a reviewable play. Yeah. So I'm not saying I necessarily disagree. I'm just unclear of what the rules are there.
I'm also completely misapprehending advantage since it was a foul by the attacking team while the attacking team had possession. So discard that point. But yeah. I agree. I totally agree with you about that. You know, it's not a reviewable call. So,
or if it is, can that be clearer? Because I really didn't understand why Colorado didn't get the call there.
So there's a world where this is, if both of those calls that we are iffy about were made, where this is a 2-1 game. Well, it ended up being a 2-0 game anyway, so I guess it's not. I guess the result was not too far away from the truth.
I mean, let's face it. I don't think anybody expected Colorado to get anything out of this game or any of the others that they're going to be playing. when their major solution to their problems is bringing in Giles Barnes. I'm sorry, Giles. Thank you for your service here. You scored a great goal one time, and I cheered the hell out of it. But, I mean, the Valeri goal, I don't think there's much you can do about that. He's so tight, he has to quickly readjust himself. He's already less than a meter away from the goalkeeper to head it in. Okay. I don't think he can really blame the defenders there and just sort of make something out of nothing. It's going to be an interesting Cascadia finish because Vancouver plays both them and Seattle soon, and Seattle apparently can't stop freaking winning. So,
yeah. The great goals after all this. Jeremy Abobasi, who has the first disallowed goal, then is able to actually collect his marker.
I always like that when a player is trying to get their first MLS goal, and it's just like, just go in, please. And it's kind of fitting that your first goal gets called offside, and then you're just like, whatever, fine, I'll score another one. Disallow this.
Yes, it was his first goal of the season. I always am also paying attention anytime a goal like this is scored within a minute to the end of halftime, because I keep saying teams are letting off. That is the efficiency point in soccer this year. Is if you play to the whistle, you have more of an opportunity. And then another, Sebastian Polanco is a big part of that first goal, and he's again a part of the second one with a great ball that has like a hilariously like a snap header it's the header that happens it so fast you wonder if it just bounced off his face. But
I think it bounced off his face.
Hilarious scores to make it 2-0 on the 65th minute.
Anyway, anyhow, any good player knows that. I feel like it's kind of redundant to do a team of the week, but what's your goal of the week? Because there were certainly a few you could pick from.
Oh, that's a great question. And I think that my answer is going to be... sorry, Birnbaum. It's not going to be... I'm sure he would love to think that he had the goal of the week. Whatever. It's got to be that free kick. Both DC goals were nice, but that one was nicer.
Okay.
What's yours?
I'm just going to be the contrarian, and this is honestly not just because I support the Whitecaps wherever they go. I think Darren Maddox's goal was fantastic.
Yeah.
And not just because of the execution, but because it mattered so much that DC United needs 3 points in as many games as they can get right now. I know that, of course, every team does, but them especially.
Yeah.
So they really, they couldn't just take a point out of this one. And I think Maddox knew that. He's been away on international duty, so he's been dealing with travel. Comes in, tears up the pitch as a sub, and honestly just makes it look easy. It looks like he's jogging in. So Darren Maddox, you get my goal of the week.
So with the games done, there are some areas where teams that did not play were keeping themselves busy. One of them was the Los Angeles Galaxy firing Siggy Schmid.
And you told me about this earlier in the week, and I was at work, and I was just like, what? And then I was like, huh, yeah. But yeah, they didn't fire him. Ziggy decided to step down, which is... I feel like MLS is the most courteous league in the world. Like, really, MLS should just be Canadian or maybe Minnesotan, where they're just like, you know what? You had a rough goal. Why don't you just step down now and we'll call it even?
So polite.
Nobody gets... Name a coach that's been fired in MLS in the last 2 years. They all step down, resign, or like, they're like, family things. I shouldn't joke about that. I know there's serious things that people have had to deal with, but... They're never just like, head coach, shit canned.
It's always like a, like whenever it seems contentious, it always seems like a, like an enigmatic battle between, you know, power strugglers, whether it's Caleb Porter leaving Portland on a relative high or Siggy leaving Seattle in the middle of Seattle's championship season 2 years ago. It's rough. You have former Houston coach Dominic Kinnear taking over instead.
Which is a pretty okay sub option to have for the rest of the season, I might add.
This comes off of a 6-2 loss to RSL. You really had to look at the standings and think that they weren't moving in a pretty competitive Western Conference. They were not moving in the right direction.
Yeah.
In terms of being able to fit into, you know, they're in eighth to get into that sixth spot. And although, you know, with the addition of Zlatan, they were better than last season. But the thing is this was two pretty disappointing seasons under Ziggy. And the last season was a real corner.
Well, it's really only one season. It's two That's half true. Seasons.
Two half seasons, but I mean, like, in terms of...
Two halves don't make a whole.
You look at this guy and his reputation for being like, you know, a little bit of a genius, and it feels like, or I don't know if genius is the right word, but you know what I mean. Like,
Like he's the really, winningest coach in MLS.
People really You'd trust expect him. More. He has such a great record.
So, I don't have too much more to add here because I cannot work out Ziggy Schmidt's mind. And I think that, you know, there's probably still a place for him in the league. Uh-huh. My question to you is, do you think that places Vancouver if Carl Robinson gets sacked?
Interesting. You've got to think, and...
And I'm not just trying to be provocative. I'm honestly like, it would seem like possibly a logical choice or fit.
The one thing that I kind of think of in terms of a team that's looking for a big sort of takeover is James O'Connor permanent in Orlando City?
No, I don't think so.
I think that would be something that I would look at no, it looks like it's. Because, that's your answer in terms of the last person to get fired was Jason Kreis.
Right. It is decidedly. RIP Jason Kreis.
RIP the very alive Jason Kreis.
For the record, Jason Kreis is alive.
I think it looks like. It looks like he was. It looks like he's permanent in there. You know, Orlando, not like Vancouver, doesn't need a culture change, but I mean, like, you know, if Ziggy can't, you know, get along with the front office in Seattle, there's no way he's gonna be able to do it in Vancouver.
All right, well that's fair. That's fair.
I don't know. I don't know that he's entirely the fit because he, and I mean, but I, this goes to sort of where it, what was kind of disappointing about LA is that you could also look to LA as this team that needed a real culture overhaul and he wasn't really able to provide that. But I would look at a team that is, you know, having that sort of approach. Do you know what the great heel move would be? It's not going to happen because hashtag save the crew, as we all know, is going to be successful. Fingers crossed. But what a heel manager in Austin he would be.
Which then means
if they're looking to have a fresh start at the beginning of their new identity as a club.
Which again, hashtag save the crew. But now that you've got the wheel spinning, Greg Berhalter would be without a job.
It's tough to imagine. Everybody, the team itself is working so hard, or not the team in the front office, but the players on the field and the coach are working so hard for the fans, it seems.
Yeah.
That I can't imagine what the emotion, like if the move goes through, like how, what the emotional turnaround is in, you know. They're doing great to focus in a really, really challenging situation. So the question is, what's next after that? Of course, Greg Berhalter doesn't have to leave. There's no, if there's a great relationship between the owner, there's no reason to not, you know, keep things intact, as you know, Houston did when the earthquakes moved there. But you look at it and you think. If you wanted to put a fresh coat of paint on the team, that's a manager who's floating around.
Yeah, it's possible. I feel like we're playing MLS coach Tinder now, so I don't want to like go too far down the road. But now I'm like, oh, just Greg Berhalter at Vancouver could be a good thing.
Speaking of Part, MLS coach, some
yeah, go ahead.
Speaking of MLS coach Tinder, I was gonna move on. Do you have one more point to make about this before I?
No. I was going to go on a tangent.
One person who's taking 10 days to decide whether or not to swipe left or swipe right on Atlanta United is Tata Martino, who has indicated that he may be considering his future.
Yes, which I feel like it's been murmured about for basically since he's arrived. That
15 to 20 days.
How he's lasted this long and stayed, but obviously he's done so well, and I believe he's one of the highest paid coaches in MLS. And Atlanta decided to wisely invest heavily in that area with him. It seems like the only real credible thing at this point is that the Colombian national team may want him as their head coach. And it's interesting because his most recent remarks kind of refuted the idea that Argentina had approached him again or any European side, but then sort of gave some a little bit of wind to the rumor about being Colombia's team coach. And then also kind of said, I've got to make a decision whether or not I want to be here for the next 2 years in the next 15 or 20 days. Uh-huh. Which is a weird way to kind of, I'm not sure how the interview is structured, but to just that be your closing comment is like, wait, I'm sorry, what? Do you know that you're the best team in MLS right now?
So, you know,
like, second best.
Like the issue with New York Red Bulls, where they had their big coaching change midseason. I wonder, like, how do you have this happen in such an area of great success? But he's great up. He's got a philosophy that he also apparently said in this interview that you can take or leave. And that philosophy is that he feels like he wants to make this decision before the playoffs. I think it's weird when a team is getting ready to gear up to maybe try and contend to have their coach announce that he's leaving at the end of the season. However, I guess it's kind of better to do it than to spend that whole time wondering about it. Maybe there's an amount of certainty in making the announcement beforehand.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, no, from a pragmatic point of view, that makes a lot of sense. And just in terms of your players know that you may be or you will be leaving, and they go, all right, let's send him off in style and win an MLS Cup for him. It still is really bizarre, but it's something that I feel like is especially unique to North American and particularly American sports, that the ongoing soap opera of trades and transfers and people leaving or getting fired is just ever present and seems more important than the sport at times. And I'm not saying that there's some grand conspiracy to like cook up press for the league on this. I'm just saying it's not unusual when you look at North American sports.
I would kind of say that there are, you know, it's kind of a little all over. You think from the years that I've watched, you would kind of think it is surprising, but it's been happening more because if you think back to that European Champions League final where between Dortmund and Bayern, where Lewandowski had already signed for Bayern at the end of the season, like, so it's not unheard of for this to happen around the world, but
no, that's true.
It's certainly a strange situation to be in, but if as with all things with Martino, it seems like there's a strategy. The one point that I would make that's similar to MLS is this, is, you know, the one thing, this extended goodbye period for Alphonso Davies that Vancouver is having is kind of like in some respects, Atlanta is emotionally preparing themselves to have that for like their whole team.
Yeah.
Where there's, you know, we've talked for ages about somebody might swoop for Martino, somebody might swoop for Martinez, somebody might swoop for Almiron, right? Like, it's not something we haven't thought about. So I would assume that the moment has been prepared for to a certain degree.
Yeah, and if they haven't, you must think, like, okay, they've been awfully naive in that regard.
Yes. I didn't get to see any of the U.S. games since none of the other CONCACAF, nobody in Canada has rights to any of the other CONCACAF games. It always seems in international breaks. But I did see about a 30-minute chunk of the CONCACAF Nations League game between Canada and the U.S. Virgin Islands.
Yes.
It was...
Yes. Can I make a 30-second news announcement in MLS before we jump to that? Just because it'll be awkward to jump back to it.
Yes.
So this is going to be a big surprise to you.
Yes.
But LAFC has brought in a young attacking player who grew up in Los Angeles.
No way.
From Italy. Josh Perez is coming back from his time in Tuscany and will be joining the squad. So who knows what the game plan is there, but just I feel like if you have every attacking player possible that exists on the globe, then who knows what can happen.
You know, this was the thing I really thought they were missing. Was another right. young attacking
Especially
player.
Especially with their captain and center back, Laurent Simon, leaving for more mustardy pastures. Clearly they needed another attacking player. So good move. I mean, he's a young player, but my God. My God. Anyway, to international news.
Canada beat the U.S. Virgin Islands 8-0 in the opening qualifier for CONCACAF Nations League. It is a result that doesn't have a lot, doesn't say a lot, because the U.S. were like, you know, there's an obvious mismatch. At times, Canada was said to be playing a 2-5-3
mm-hmm.
with Alphonso Davies starting, Vancouver's Alphonso Davies starting on the left back position mm-hmm. and sort of moving up. Davies didn't score, but Osorio scored the first goal on the 6th minute, and it was just a cavalcade. Cavallini 2 minutes later, Jonathan David twice on the 32nd and 37th minute. Lucas Cavallini.
I was gonna follow, who does Jonathan David play for? Because I've heard his name before, and I did watch this game or a good chunk of it.
2 for David, 2 for Laird, 2 for Cavallini, 1 for Junior Hoylett and Kyle Laren.
Jonathan, he plays for Ghent.
Ghent. Oh yes, I've heard of Ghent. Yes, I like Ghent. That's a good name. Yeah, just another European player that you're, you know, pulling in to get some minutes. I think I'm trying to quickly amass all my Jonathan David knowledge. I think that it is, you know, this is a one-time thing. Hopefully, if Canada qualifies for the CONCACAF Nations League and it doesn't get relegated, hopefully it's a one-time thing. It speaks to the issues of the program that it took him this long. Oh, this is David, who's an 18-year-old, this is his first, that was his Canada debut.
Yeah, okay, I was going to say, because I was like, I've heard the name before, but I don't feel like he's featured for the national team. Not that I've been paying super close attention, admittedly, but I was like, I'm pretty sure he's not been here before, and I didn't hear anything in the commentary. I mean, it's basically just whoever was in the stands at the time filming on their home video camera for YouTube doing the commentary, but
if you saw any of the U23 stuff this year, he was in it.
Okay. That's maybe where I came across his name.
But yeah, you look at it and you just say it's not. There's not a lot happening out of it. The idea of trying to replace some amount of friendlies with competitive games is an idea that has merit, but a fixture like Canada versus the U.S. Virgin Islands is exactly what CONCACAF needs to get away from. It's not like Canada has entirely proved themselves as like not being, you know, not being worthy of it, because, you know, other teams that are in this same scenario, Jamaica is in the same boat. So Jamaica and El Salvador, it's like all the Pot A teams in the champions in the Nations League are teams that you will maybe see at the Gold Cup, and you know, they're kind of, they can be forces, or they had to be forces at some point. And then everyone else is just, you know, Turks and Caicos Islands, St. Vincent and the Grenadines.
I mean, kind of deal. Yeah, I saw a lot of chat on Twitter about this game that was kind of like, look, nobody wants to disrespect an international team, especially one that doesn't have a lot of resources. So, like, credit to the players that show up and play for teams like these. They're playing to try to get results, and they don't. It's completely imbalanced.
Yeah,
they don't have the same level of resources, and they're doing the best they can. So you can't just be like, Virgin Islands suck. Like,
it's good. You know, it's good. It's very good. Like everyone should get games. So,
of course. But I think the real thing here is just that, like, an 8-0 win here I mean, sure, you could say, well, 10 years ago, this could have been a total reversal and we could have lost 8-0 against the U.S. Virgin Islands. Who knows? But it really wasn't a competitive match. No. And we didn't look particularly good for much of it. Mm-hmm. For scoring 8 goals, the formation was really out of shape. And it was a pretty slow... It looked like... No, I mean, like, I've seen the T-Birds play at UBC here in Vancouver, the college team. Mm. Much more organized.
It's hard to say.
I'm not trying to make a direct comparison. I'm just trying to say, like, college soccer is more organized than the formation that was on the pitch because they could literally just run wherever they wanted to, which, okay, it's great to get a win and to get some chemistry between players, but it wasn't a competitive match, therefore... How much utility does it really have when we're up against much better teams and actually have to organize? Because that's been one of Canada's major downfalls, is that everybody's just all over the place and we're not playing competitive matches in the lead up. So it's everybody, it looks like us practicing because we are.
Yeah. And if there's more regular games against other teams in the, In CONCACAF, any conference, you know, you always gain from playing teams that are better than you, and you always sort of stagnate when you're just like sort of knocking people around. That's why Australia went to the Asian conference. But so this is not that kind of fixture, but Canada's had a recent run of poor results. So 3 more match days and hopefully, fingers crossed, it will be a swift qualification to the Nations League in the sure. more challenging opposition.
Yeah.
The other game that I got to see this week with a little bit of time and space is the final Portland Thorns game of the season against the Seattle Reign, which was sort of being billed as in NWSL's 14 playoff structure. Basically, whoever would win would play would host the other. Mm-hmm. So a game to determine home seeding in next weekend's playoff game. Portland won 3-1. Jess Fishlock hits this goal very early to give Seattle the win, but with 2 goals from Lindsay Horan and another goal from Tobin Heath, Portland is able to sort of execute a turnaround after a championship season that started poorly. Is executed at a turnaround that I think, from the limited amount of games that I saw this year, I believe that when they broke the 16 game unbeaten streak of the North Carolina Courage, that was kind of a big turning point. It seemed at the time like that was that because these were the two teams that were in the final last year, that's the big matchup. And in terms of opponents, the Courage are facing the Chicago Red Stars in the other semifinal. Portland are far more likely to lose than the Courage are, who had been the champions the year before when they were the Western New York Flash. But we could be heading to another game between those two. The complicating factor is that the home game that the Courage are going to be facing, the Courage are going to be playing, may have to be moved, and as of writing because of Hurricane Florence, as of this moment, we still don't. They've issued a statement today saying that it is likely to be moved, or it is risking being moved, but there's no news yet at that point. Whether it would be moved in time,
I mean, you have to imagine that that's what's going to happen, considering the strength that thing is gathering. So if we do have listeners in that region, good God, look out for yourselves.
Yes, please stay safe.
That thing is building speed. And yeah.
The one thought that one thing that I had heard is a potential as a potentiality. People are, well, the Red Stars were talking about, you know, somebody asked, what would you think of Portland? Because the West semifinal is going to be in Portland, and they have a neutral site. Portland is selected as the new location of the neutral site final. So you would...
what's the date of that? Don't tell me that. I could probably get down there.
Well, I'm looking up something else before I could answer that question. The Courage finished which was just to double check that it was... Oh, no, it wasn't. It wasn't the Thorns. It was the Utah Royals that broke the Courage's winning streak. So ignore everything I said about that being a turning point.
which but, is also like, I'm so glad that you're bringing this up, because also we made a commitment last year to kind of follow it more, and I've been totally off of that. Mm-hmm. And this is a good reminder that I need to get back on it and see what's going on.
So the true things in that was that North Carolina was on a crazy 12-game unbeaten streak. They did lose, but they also then went on to win the next 15 games. So
that helps.
So it was fine. Or not 12, not 15, 11 games. So they only had the one loss on the season. They broke all of the United States women's pro sports wins and points records. They had 17 wins. They had 57 points. And they also had a better points per game ratio than both NWSL teams and teams from the previous American pro leagues. So that was good. But I do believe it is true that Portland turned around the season. So we are. It's kind of like an echo of these two, after a really hard fought 1-0 final last year. These two teams are potentially ricocheting together again. Although it would be awful funny if Seattle won that semifinal and then went on to compete for the championship at Providence Park. As the Western Conference representative,
it'd be great.
If you are, if you have any, this is the main call that I would say is, whatever happens with the Courage game, this coming up weekend, that is on Saturday the 15th at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, noon Pacific. So, give that game a look at NWSLsoccer.com. You can stream it for free. And you should do that.
Yeah, you should. Also, a quick shout out, Vancouver fans. The UBC Thunderbirds, I believe, are kicking off their season soon, both the women's and men's teams. We've done ever so well, so they're entertaining games to be at and actually draw pretty great crowds. So if you just want to be at a slightly smaller but still rambunctious crowd game, and Melissa Bustos, the younger sister to Marco Bustos, former Whitecap, signed late last year with our team and looks to be in good form. So that'll be something to watch. So if you're in the Vancouver area, pay attention to those games as well. If you want to see, that talent pool, look for them to be the up and coming Canadian women's national team players.
Thunderbirds are a great time.
Yeah.
With games coming up next week, in the meantime, where can we find you online?
You can find me online at That's So MLS on Twitter and also on Instagram. We have an Instagram. I should probably post something on that. Ignore that comment. Follow us on Instagram. There's lots of great stuff that I post, and you can engage with us there. It would be lovely to hear from some listeners about questions, comments, corrections. Maybe less of those, but just if you do, you know, if you listen to the show, reach out to us. We'd love to hear from you.
No doubt. You can find me online at Team Bates on Twitter, www.team-bates.com. I am an editor at Howler Magazine, whatahowler.com. And you can find this podcast at thatsonless.com and on iTunes and wherever podcasts are located.
So please, it's called Apple Podcasts now.
Whatever, rate, review.
Who cares? Rate, review, and rescribe. Prescribe.
Do one of those things, please, for us. We make you feel good.
Thanks, friends. Until next week, don't hit the post.